So what that means is you guys are the first to play with fire in the week. You get to play with fire today.
Are you excited about that?
That means as soon as I shut up, you have to put on goggles and keep them on your eyes the whole time you're here. All right?
Who's clean?
Also, be careful with your hair. It will go up quickly if you put your hair on top of a burning flame.
I did that this morning.
And what will it smell like?
Burnt hair.
Sulfur, because of the disulfide bridges. Anyway, we are performing a technique today, which we haven't done yet at all. That general technique is called what? That's not a technique, that's a device. And by the way, these are not Bunsen burners, these are Fisher burners. The handout might say that incorrectly, but they are Fisher burners. Anyway, the technique is called calorimetry. Kaler means heat, which is energy. And metri means measurement, right? So it's measurement of energy. Measurement of energy content of some sample. And you're using samples that are mostly food. You could eat all of them, but only one of them isn't really food because you can't digest it, right? Which one am I talking about? The sticks are mostly cellulose. Remember I showed you the cow picture? It's chock full of energy. That doesn't mean it has no calories. Simply means you can't get any nutritive calories out of it. But the substance contains energy, and that's what calorimetry can measure. Has nothing to do necessarily with eating anything. Calorimetry is simply measuring the energy content of some substance, whether it's going to be eaten or not. But speaking of calories, this brings up one of my many pet peeves. This is a really stupid part of science, embarrassingly stupid. Calorie is a unit of energy. There's also a unit of energy called the calorie. Now, did you hear that difference?
No.
Of course not, because they're homophones. It's part of the stupidity. One of them is spelled calorie, and one of them is spelled calorie.
Nice.
The only difference is a capital C versus a lowercase c. And they are different units, by three orders of magnitude different.
So calorie.
Yeah, well, that's why it's...
Whisper the first one. Calorie.
This is why it particularly pisses me off. But let's start with a calorie with a lowercase c, which we could also call a scientific calorie. It is a unit of energy. There's many units of energy, of course, right? But specifically, the calorie is based on water. A scientific calorie, a lowercase c calorie, is the amount of energy required to raise the temperature of exactly 1 gram of water by 1 centigrade degree, or 1 Kelvin, same size.
You make me laugh.
Well, it's recorded. No, I will repeat. It's the amount of energy required to raise exactly 1 gram of water's temperature by exactly 1 centigrade degree, which is also known as 1 Kelvin. I shouldn't say also known as. It's the same size as 1 Kelvin. Okay? That's a calorie. Now, I just said a gram of water, which is mass, of course. But what is the volume of 1 gram of water under standard conditions? If it's pure water. 1 gram of water occupies exactly 1 milliliter of volume at standard conditions. What's another name for a milliliter, by the way? How big is a millimeter? I mean a milliliter. One centimeter by one centimeter by one centimeter. So it's also known as a cubic centimeter. That's one milliliter. So 1,000 of those cubes make up 1 liter. And therefore, if that 1,000 milliliters or 1 liter is occupied by pure water, you have 1 kilogram of water. 1,000 grams. But anyway, that's what a scientific calorie is. Stupidly, someone thought it was a good idea to make another unit with a capital C instead, called calorie, which is actually a kilocalorie. So uppercase C is really a kilocalorie. And with a capital C, we also call those food calories. Not because only food contains them, but because when you think about calories in the everyday sense of the word, like I'm taking in too many calories, whatever, by eating, those are kilocalories, not calories. Now, when you think about food labels saying that the average adult should have 2,000 calories per day, that's 2,000 kilocalories, 2 million calories, which is enough to raise the temperature of 1 gram of water 2 million degrees. That's a hell of a lot of energy, right? Or it's enough to raise 2 million grams of water 1 degree. And you know how hard it is to raise the temperature of water. It has a high specific heat capacity. So that's a lot of energy that our bodies spend just living for a day. But that's just a... Like I say, it has nothing to do with eating necessarily. I'm just giving you an idea of how big a calorie it is. It's based on heating up water, though. And so you're going to take advantage of that definition of the calorie to do your version of calorimetry, which is a very crude version, which will be prone to very high errors. And that's because you're going to measure the amount of energy in foods by burning them and holding that burning food under a test tube filled with a known volume of water and measuring how much that known volume heats up. That'll allow you, based on that temperature change and based on the definition of the calorie, compute how many calories were in that food. Does that make sense? If you had exactly 1 milliliter or 1 gram of water, and you raised the temperature exactly 1 degree centigrade, then it must have been 1 calorie that went into that water. That's the basis. But it's really crude because think about what you're doing. When you hold a flame under the test tube, is 100% of that heat going to go into the water? Not even close. For one thing, you see the flame. And that's energy itself that's being released. You might hear it crackle. That's energy that's lost. Plus, you're just heating up the air around it that's not going into the tube itself. That's really the biggest source of energy loss. Also, it might take you a while to get it burning. That's losing some of the energy. And it takes you some time to get it from where you light it to get it under the tube. There's all kinds of ways that energy is going to be lost. And that's why your computations of energy content are probably going to be way lower than what the food labels say. Because you've lost a bunch of that energy. To do a careful measurement, you use a different version of calorimetry called bomb calorimetry. We're not going to do this, but that's how you would get values for food labels, for instance. A bomb calorimeter, which is the device, is called that because the sample, whatever you're measuring, is put into a very thick-walled stainless steel thing that's kind of like a bomb. That's called the bomb. And it can open up, so you can put your sample in there, and it's fitted with electrodes so that it can be sparked. That's the ignition source. That's why it's called a bomb. But before that, after you put your sample in, you close it off, and then pump it full of several atmospheres worth of pure oxygen. So that when you do light it, it'll burn completely. There will be plenty of oxygen so that it will be a complete combustion. Which means that all of the energy will be released into the walls of the bomb. Nothing can escape material-wise, right? So all of the heat can only go into the walls of the bomb. Now that would be wasted if it weren't for the fact that the bomb itself is immersed in a vat of water that you know exactly the volume of. You know exactly how much water is in here, and before this happens, you take a very careful measurement of the temperature. Then you explode the thing. Well, the bomb doesn't explode, but it heats up. That heat can only go into the water because it's surrounded by the water. And therefore, all of the energy that's liberated from that sample should go into heating the water. This is why it's a really accurate measurement. As long as you very carefully make a final and initial temperature measurement, and as long as you very carefully measure the volume. Right? Because if it's 5,000 calories that get released, it depends on how much water you have here as to how much temperature change there's going to be, right? If you have 5,000 grams, then it should be 1 degree exactly. If you have 2,500 grams of water, it should be 2 degrees, and so on. Is that all clear? You're doing the same thing, except a lot of your energy is lost for the various reasons I said. But to get good results, you can at least minimize those losses. There's some of it you can't help but lose. But to do this well, you're using pieces of foil. You have a ring stand already set up with your thermometer, and you have a clamp that holds your tube. This is part of the way that you can make good results, is you never want your thermometer to be directly touching the glass of your tube, the bottom or the sides. So it can take some fine adjusting before you start your burning to get your tube set up properly, right? But first you fill your tube up with you have to carefully measure the volume, because the volume matters, right? That's why it tells you a specific volume to use. Once you have that in your tube, you put your tube up here and use the knobs to clamp it into place so that the thermometer bulb is all the way immersed but not touching any glass. Get that in place first. But also swing it around, swing the clamps around so that it's over the base of the ring stand. Because the base of the ring stand is where you're going to put your piece of foil that you're using, one piece of foil for each run, for each trial. That's because when you burn these things, depending on which sample it is, debris will be shed. It might drip or otherwise. And all of that stuff is material, right? The only material that will be released because of combustion happening is carbon dioxide and water that are going into the air. So they won't be part of your final mass measurement, right? It's important that you not only measure the change in water temperature, but also how much mass of the food actually burned. That's why you need a careful initial and final measurement of your food mass. Because any difference in there, you're assumed got turned into carbon dioxide and water. Burned in there, in other words. So the point is, you need to collect anything that spills. It's not important that 100% of it burn. In fact, you want to blow it out under certain conditions. But you do want to collect everything. So don't let it just fall on the table or onto the bare ring stand base. Because you can't put those things onto the scale. Start with a piece of foil down there, and anything that sticks to the foil, that's fine. because that foil can be measured before and after. But that's an important point too. Make sure that you get an initial mass of the foil. Don't zero it with the foil on. That could work, but you could run into some problems, especially if someone else uses the device. What the hell is this called? Balance. Okay, so don't do that. Instead, zero the scale with nothing on it. Then put your piece of foil on it and write down that initial foil measurement. Or I'm sorry, not just the foil. The foil and your food. And get that initial combined mass. And then take that particular piece of foil back with you. And it can be a fresh one or a reused one, as long as you get the initial mass with the food on it. Okay? Put the foil under it so that it collects everything. And then take what's left in your tongs, because you're holding the food with tongs while it's burning, anything that's left over, plus the foil and anything split on it, and get a final one after you zero with nothing on it. Is all that clear? Therefore, any difference in all of that, the foil itself gets subtracted out, plus the rest of the difference is what turned into CO2 and water and vapor in the air. And that will be that your change in mass will mean how much of your food released the energy that you captured. So to calculate how many calories per gram, you need that amount of grams that burned. And to get the calories, you get that from the change in water temperature as it burned. Okay, now, this should be pure water, so use distilled. And use new room temperature water each time. Don't start with already hot water. And that's because of something I told you in another week. If you start heating up water, over time it's going to rise in temperature, but when it gets to the boiling point, it's not going to increase in temperature anymore. It's going to stay at the boiling point and just turn into gas. You don't want to approach that point because you want a change in temperature. There is no change between there and there, even though there's heat being added. You see what I'm saying? So that's why it tells you as a warning that if your temperature gets to what point? What does it say? 85 or something? 80 degrees, blow it out. Doesn't matter that it doesn't burn. You're going to still get a change in mass by weighing it. But blow it out so it doesn't get close to boiling. Keeping in mind that the temperature might still rise a little bit after it's blown out. So you need to get a good initial measurement of temperature. Write that down before you start burning it. Let it stabilize. If it's changing, wait. And then whether it goes out by itself or you blow it out, let it stabilize again and write that final temperature measurement down. Those will be your raw data. The changes in temperature, the changes in mass will allow you, based on the definition of calories, compute how many calories per gram of food. And compare them. Any questions? Yeah.
Is calorimetry the measure of energy content, or is it the measure of energy content by burning?
It's not necessarily by burning. There's also what's called indirect calorimetry, which I did a lot of as my doctoral research. In my doctoral research, actually, but that's based on amount of oxygen and carbon dioxide that are being measured with a live organism in a chamber. But it's based on the fact that we're burning fuels continuously and producing CO2 from them and using oxygen to do that burning.
And every time that we have energy like that, is it always going to be carbon dioxide and water that's produced?
If it's a carbon-containing or organic fuel, like I was saying today. Now, you could use pure hydrogen as a fuel, And that would, I wish we were doing that, because there wouldn't be greenhouse gases. We would just be making water. Hydrogen and oxygen react explosively. That's why the Hindenburg burned. But
is this that it's carbon dioxide and water, or is it because?
You're talking about the natural gas that we're using? That's going to produce carbon dioxide because there's carbon in the fuel itself, yes. All right, any other questions? What's the very first thing you're going to do? Don goggles, yes. And secure your hair. Oh, by the way, get a feel for the sparkers. If you have a lighter, just use a lighter. But if you but get a feel for the sparkers before you turn on the gas, so you can realize how easy it is to spark it. Then just turn the gas on. By the way, these lever valves are fully on this way, and then they go back to off. So this is fully on. That's off. That's off. You'll hear them. You'll hear it hiss. But
I'm gonna unplug this.
Just light it. Don't blow each other up.
No problem.